Okay, we are all here. Okay, is everybody ready? Is everybody sitting down? Excellent, thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm done here. This is our 3 o'clock panel. It is called Women Aren't Funny and Other Essential Untruths for Middle Grade Readers. Now, this is for women only. Sorry, Ed Spicer is in the front row. This is only for, not this panel, but the next command I'm going to give you. Please think of your favorite joke. Write it down, either on your phone or on a piece of paper. Part of our Q&A will be calling on people to have them tell their jokes. Do we think this is a good idea?
Yeah. Woo.
This is why I didn't want any men to do it, because it didn't say that men aren't funny. Many are not.
Name.
Amen. Huh? Okay, this is our panel description. Humor, it grabs boys' attention, keeps them turning pages, and makes them clamor for more books like that. But wait a second, boys aren't the only ones demanding funny books, and men certainly aren't the only ones writing them. So why do these misperceptions persist? With editor Sharon November as moderator, thank you. 5 middle grade authors will discuss the serious business of busting stereotypes and the pleasures and pitfalls of being female and writing funny. I am now going to introduce our panelists. Starting at the end with Betsy. I was going to do it alphabetically, but I'll do it physically. Betsy Bird is the collection development manager of Evanston Public Library. She runs the children's literature blog, A Fuse 8 Production at SLJ, and reviews for Kirkus. She is the author of the picture book Giant Dance Party, co-author of Wild Things, Acts of Mischief in Children's Literature with fellow bloggers Jules Danielson and Peter Ceruta, and the editor of the anthology of funny female writers, Funny Girl, which is this book. And I will hand it down to Betsy so she can wave it herself.
Okay.
But give it back to me at the end because it's mine.
No problem.
Next is Andrea Beattie. Andrea Beattie is best known for her ability to grow her hair really fast.
Really fast. Just watch. Just know where it is now.
They already know that. You're best known for that.
I know.
She's like beautiful Chrissy, but a person. Who got that reference? Okay. She is also known for writing funny books for kids, including Dorko the Magnificent and the groundbreaking nonfiction series Attack of the Fluffy Bunnies. In her leisure moment, she writes picture books, including Rosie Revere, Engineer, and Ada Twist, Scientist.
Thank you.
Andrea also holds ridiculously strong views on Doctor Who companions. Don't even get her started about Clara Oswald.
And I mean don't.
Seriously,
don't.
Next, Erica Pearl. Erica Pearl is three of the following things. One, the author of picture books including Chicken Butt and Goatilocks and the Three Bears. Two, the author of middle grade novels including When Life Gives You OJ and the forthcoming All Three Stooges. Three, the author of plays including The Capybara Conspiracy. Four, hilarious. Five, terrible at math. Okay, Rita Williams Garcia. Rita Williams Garcia is the New York Times bestselling author of 9 novels for young adults and middle grade readers. Her most recent middle grade novel is Clayton Bird Goes Underground, and she is mostly known for her trilogy featuring the Gaither sisters from One Crazy Summer. Her novels have received numerous awards, including the Coretta Scott King Award, National Book Award finalist, Newbery Honor Book, and the Scott O'Dell Prize for Historical Fiction. Yes. You know, a little nothing here. She served as faculty at the Vermont College of Fine Arts Writing for Children MFA program for 10 years and resides in Queens, New York. Can I blow your cover?
Yeah.
Her daughter is in the audience.
She's in the book too.
This is Michelle. She's in the book with Rita. I have known Michelle since she was, what, 8? Crazy. Cece Bell, who we love. You might know Cece Bell as the author and illustrator of El Defo and I Am a Donkey, or Donkey, depending upon where you come from. Others know her as the inventor of cottage cheese. Cece's main objective in life is to make people laugh. She is married to author Tom Engelberger, who makes her laugh. You should follow their Instagrams. They are awesome. If you haven't, do it. And then there's me. Sharon November, which is me, is an editorial and marketing strategist who works, okay, conspires, with authors, agents, and publishers. For many years, she was senior editor at Viking Children's Books and the editorial director of Firebird. She has acquired and edited some very funny books, including Susan Juby's The Truth Commission, John Barnes's Tales of the Madman Underground, Diana Wynne Jones's Tough Guide to Fantasyland, and Betsy Bird's Funny Girl. Okay. We are all awesome. We are all awesome. So, we have questions, and I'm just going to go through these questions. And here's the question. I can do this in order, and then I can switch it up. But we should just switch it up. Feel free to interrupt each other. Shut up. Don't laugh. This is actually a very serious subject. It is. I mean, humor is the hardest thing to write, as far as I'm concerned. And it is taken the least seriously. And it's the best way to get people hooked on reading.
Good humor is the hardest thing to write.
What is?
Good humor.
Well, yes. Thank you.
And humor is very easy to write.
Okay. It's like bass playing. Okay. This is a two-part question. $500 for the first point. Why are funny books important, and why should we take them seriously? Who would like to venture to answer this question first?
Okay.
Thank you, Rita. P.S. There are mics. Pick up the mic.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, why are funny books important? Okay. Right now, how many of your lives are filled with bowls of cherry? Ooh. You know, seriously, we could all use a laugh. Humor has just gotten us through every and any time. Even the darkest time, someone cracks an inappropriate joke that throws the horror completely upside down and just brings everybody down to that human moment. So, you know, humor just keeps us level. It really puts things in perspective. It throws off that big, awful ogre, whatever it may be, and it just lets us keep on. It just lets us keep going. And the part two is what? Which what?
Well, I think you answered them both.
Oh,
actually.
There we go. Two birds, one stone. Who's next?
Do you have $500
yet? Play money.
All right.
Like I said, humor.
Here we go.
I'm going to take this from the children's librarian standpoint. And I'm going to say, when people object to what kids are reading, it's almost always funny books. It's Junie B. Jones. It's Captain Underpants. It's why are they only reading Diary of a Wimpy Kid? Sometimes it's not. On the YA side, even more so, sometimes it's not. But on the kids' side, the funny stuff is the stuff that gets the articles in the newspaper with people saying, I don't approve of my child only reading this. And you could make a case either way. But it's how you get the reluctant readers to read. It's how you get the kids interested in the books. There's the phrase, as long as they're reading. I ascribe to that. I learned many interesting things about palindromes from Archie Comics when I was a child. Because my mom's theory was, well, you know, if they're reading, they must be getting something out of it. I learned about palindromes, haha. So my general thinking is that humorous books are how you lure the children. They're the gateway drug of reading, and they serve an excellent purpose. And to, you know, what Rita said as well, they are important as well for other reasons.
You can speak.
Well, and let me just add on to what you just said, which is that a lot of times, you know, good humor involves, that you know, kind of pile of candy to get kids into the book. But then once they get in there, there's broccoli, folks. There's all sorts of, you know, good stuff going on in there that they're not going to notice because they're having so much fun. So they're meanwhile, you know, they're learning all sorts of stuff and they're finding out all sorts of stuff and all sorts of things are kind of filtering in and taking hold and making lifelong readers because you got them there in the first place. Yeah.
Yes, exactly what she said, except for the broccoli. No, it's totally broccoli.
Kale.
Kale. Okay. I don't understand it, but we'll talk about kale later. I don't understand.
No, we won't.
That. No, we won't. Okay, good point.
Stuff is gross.
I think that all of...
Kale is at 4.
Oh, that's a panel. Kale panel 4. It's not here. It's somewhere else. I think also the thing about reading, as a reader, when you read humor and when it connects to you, there's a strength of that bond that is, I think, stronger than even having an emotional response, a sad response or something to what you're reading. I think it's so immediate and it's direct to the heart, and also it's sort of an unexpected response. When you really have a gut laugh at something, you don't see it coming, and there it gets you. And suddenly you're like, oh, I'm hooked into this book because now they get me. The author understands me. They could make me laugh. So I think that it's a very emotional, but it's also intellectual, but it really is at the gut level.
Do you want to say anything about this, Cece?
Oh, well, hi. Is this working?
Yes.
Okay. I can't hear myself. So, sorry, inappropriate. I think that, probably somebody has already said this, but if not, I think that humor can be a learned thing, and there are a lot of kids, like myself, back when I was a kid, who needed that skill set as a means of survival. You know, if I'm funny, then people will like me because I'm funny, and they won't fixate on, say, the big hearing aids coming out of my ears and stuff like that. And so the funny books become important as sort of as teaching tools. You know, here's how to be funny. And I know Woody Allen is probably in some disfavor right now, but as a kid, I remember reading the book Without Feathers, mm-hmm. and just crying and thinking, I'm just going to take everything, all of this absurdist humor, and make it mine. And I did to some degree. And so I'm kind of rambling, but they really teach kids who need humor as a sort of a defense how to use it, and what they can do with it. So.
I think these are great answers. Humor is the great leveler. And it also, as you said, humor is all about surprise. Because you wouldn't laugh if you didn't know it was coming. Yeah. Unless, of course, you're a 5-year-old who's told the same joke 50 times and thinks it's funny every single time. Or me. I'll add a few things to the stereotype, to the children's librarian. You know, you see funny books. It's rare that funny books win the major awards, too. You'll see them win a lot of state awards because kids are picking them.
That's a good call.
But, you know, a dog often has to die. Where you invoke Gordon Corman and No More Dead Dogs. But it's, I think, writing good humor, as we said, is the hardest thing to do. And it's not taken as seriously as it should be by the reading public, even though that's often what people will be mostly reading. So that's one of the stereotypes about humor. I'm actually going to leap straight to question 3, which you liked. Male and female humor stereotypes, because that's the point of this whole panel. And Betsy, I'd actually like you to talk about the genesis of Funny Girl, because I think that speaks directly to this panel. And I'd love you to then talk, you know, because we all have something to say about this.
Sure. So Funny Girl, anthology, tons of funny women in a single book, 4 kids. You know, I was working as a children's librarian in New York City. Diary of a Wimpy Kid had just come out, and suddenly it was kind of nice because Diary of a Wimpy Kid made funny cool, like because Harry Potter made magic and wizards cool, and Twilight made shiny vampires cool, and Hunger Games made
killing each other.
killing each other, awesome. And then, but it was Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which was a children's book, not teen, because then all the things were becoming teen. But Diary of a Wimpy Kid, children's book that made the funny cool. And you had boys and girls coming up to the desks in the children's room saying, I love Diary of a Wimpy Kid. What do you have that is exactly like it? Give me more humor. So I would run, I'll do that, and grab things. And it seemed to me, because I am lazy, if I could just get everything in one place, that would be nice, particularly if there were women involved. And lo and behold, there were no collections of funny women. There were collections of humor, of which you would find, if you were lucky, one woman who was usually situationally funny. There are other collections where there are funny women. I should say they do not exist, but they were not as easy to find as I would have liked, and there certainly wasn't one that was just old ladies. So I thought that was kind of weird. And speaking to stereotypes about humor, I think it's weird because we have, I think we've all heard periodically, you know, you had Jerry Lewis who said it, and you had...
Dick.
Yeah, well, yes. Clown Who Cried is a classic. And then you had, oh gosh, what was it? The guy in The Man Show, Adam Carolla, saying that if you had a writing team, the weakest writer is always the woman, the token woman. You know, the women aren't funny stereotype is pervasive and does not go away. And so, you know, I would ask the kids, like, name me the funniest woman in the world. Who do you think is the funniest woman in the world? And I think it's like 50% of the time they'd point to another kid in the room and say, her! And then 10% of the time they'd be like, me! 20% of the time they'd say, my mom! And the rest of the time they would say somebody famous, but it was a movie star or a TV star or a YouTube star, which I always find interesting, or a YouTube writer. That's interesting. But never an author. Now, to be fair, they might, if you ask them who's the funniest man in the world, how often are they going to say an author? Maybe not that often either, but it might come up in some way. And then if I ask them, like, name the funniest female writer, they'll mention writers, but they're not necessarily funny. It's just they're, like, searching their brains for, like, female author. This one. And they may or may not be funny. So it's sort of, it's not something that they can just conjure up. You ask them to name a funny guy, a funny male writer, they can do that, I think, a lot faster. And so I was kind of hoping to squash that and make it easier for them to conjure up that idea. But it is battling the idea that men, you know, the class clown is not usually supposed to be a girl. It's usually supposed to be a boy. That moniker is not placed on the women so much. And I wanted to do away with that.
Good point. And you wanted to talk about this, didn't you?
Yeah. I feel like in a lot of ways that sort of Captain Underpants type, almost gadological humor is, and a lot of girls are taught, you know, let's be ladylike and, you know, don't cut the cheese, okay? And cut the literal cheese, not the figurative cheese. So, but that's the humor that I like best because I was one of those lucky girls whose mother and grandmother enjoyed talking about the potty all the time. And so, yay for me. And so where Sharon is saying it's very difficult to write humor, I feel the opposite. Just for me personally, trying to write something serious with beautiful description, that just makes me cry tears and blood. It's just horrible. But
go into the bathroom. Maybe it will work better there.
But that's a real stereotype where it seems like only boys are going to find this funny, and so more men write this way, that sort of scatological or even goofy, simply just goofy or absurdist or whatever. But girls love that stuff just as much. And so one of my main goals as a writer is to be as goofy and as weird as possible because weirdness is fun, and, you know, girls need that kind of let's just let loose here and be goofy and not be so worried about how we look and what other people think of us. Just, you know, be the hell goofy because it's just so much more fun. So I hate that stereotype. You know, Captain Underpants, maybe it's written by Dave Pilkey, who is the nicest man in the world. It is for everybody, and it really is. It is.
What I've been finding in my experience is that at times, both boys and girls can find the same things funny, you know, and the letters that I get often are about either Big Ma and her antics, and that she says things like Grand Negro Spectacle, and the scene in One Crazy Summer where Vanetta takes the magic, the black magic marker, the extra thick black magic marker, and marks up Fern's doll. You know, because here you have the one sister who everyone learns to kind of love, and she's sweet, and then you have the other sister who is just like, you know, who's always kind of bothering her or something like that. And when she takes that magic marker and colors the doll, but you're like, it can go one or two ways. It can either, the reaction can be, you know, because it is racially a very sensitive thing to talk about blackening up a, you know, black facing a doll, you know. So we're getting into laughing about something that can be potentially very racially controversial, but kids break through those things and they laugh at what's funny, and they break through that enough to see that it's really all about the girls and what they laugh at about them. And so, you know, it's like you can take something, you do have to be somewhat aware and sensitive and all of that, but you can still go for it. You can still talk about something that's potentially racially charged and still make it as funny as heck, and both kids, you know, gender non-specific, you know, they'll laugh. They'll find what's funny in it.
Exactly. Yeah, Erica was going to talk, weren't you, about Jewish humor. Now I'm thinking about that briefly. Did you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I feel like
we're kind of skipping around here, but there's a lot here.
Yeah, well, we were talking a little bit when we were putting the panel together about the extent to which, you know, some humor is different in different cultural contexts, and what, you know, what jokes play more broadly and what jokes don't. And I feel like, you know, while there is my books, my middle grade novels in particular, several of them, the new one, All Three Stooges, that isn't out yet, and then When Life Gives You O.J. and Ace as well, all have kind of Jewish content, but they're secular books. But they're about Jewish characters. And so there is sort of a context in which there's, you know, Jewish humor kind of woven through the book. All Three Stooges in particular, because it's about two boys who bond over their love for comedy. And so there's a lot of comedy references that I wove in. But as I was going through them, I found that it was harder and harder to find, you know, kind of women I could hold up that would be both great to introduce kids to, and also that the characters in the book, that it would play real, that they would actually find them funny and not just historical. You know, like when you look at a scene that Fanny Bryce did, like some of that stuff is funny, but I'm not entirely sure that a kid today would stumble across it and bust a gut.
Or Joan,
you know?
Rivers.
So, yeah. So just figuring out what, you know, both in terms of, you know, as I said, cultural context for humor, and also just how humor changes over time. You know,
can I ask who you included?
So and the other problem was that some, you know, Sarah Silverman was a little tough to put in a middle grade book. I did give her
although
a shout.
Although the potty humor is right there.
Say, yeah, she goes a little beyond what I would call potty humor, but I gave her a shout out at the end of the book. But yeah, I'm trying to think. There were just like a whole bunch that I mentioned, but it was hard. They were few and far between. Gilda Radner. Gilda Radner and Fanny Bryce and a couple of others kind of made it in there. But it was tricky to sort of scratch and find that stuff. And it sort of rings true to my own experience. Like, I grew up loving Mad Magazine. Like, I was really, yeah, Mad fans in the house. Thank you. I loved Mad Magazine. And I never, and I still, yeah, it's still hilarious. I have some of those old issues, and they're hilarious. Okay, we'll talk. Yeah. But when you look at who the creators were, it's very boy centric, and actually, if you look at some of the ones that cracked me up as a kid, some of them are really misogynist and awful. And yet, you know, it was what I knew, and it was what I recognized was funny at the time. And it wasn't until later on, when I came across people like Linda Barry, that all of a sudden I was like, wow, like that's, you know, that's really funny, and I can kind of see myself in that in a way.
There's actually a collection called Titters. I don't know if any ladies know about this
great
collection.
Title.
It came out in the 70s, and it was edited by Ann Beatz, who was one of the Saturday Night Live writers. And I feel like there might have been two of them, but it was the first time I had seen a collection of women's humor in an anthology. And it was like the level of National Lampoon-ish, which is also sexist. But really interesting stuff, I think. I mean, I was thinking too, parenthetically, about each culture has its own sort of R humor. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're, how many Lutheran jokes have I heard? Jesus.
Are you asking? I can tell you some.
And yet, I don't know any.
You're not hanging around with the right Lutherans. I mean, you could also argue that, like, everybody in New York has Jewish humor.
Yeah, well, that, yeah.
You know, it's a lot of it is the sentence construction.
Yeah.
Or the delivery. Or African-American humor. Or even humor in the deaf community, which, can I tell a quick anecdote about this?
Yes.
I was giving a presentation, and there was a deaf librarian in the audience, and this was not an oralist, this was someone who did sign, and later I asked the interpreter to ask her what she thought was funny. And she said, slapstick comedy, things like The Three Stooges, except she added, I hate The Three Stooges. My husband likes The Three Stooges. It's really interesting how every single community has its own sort of joke vocabulary. But there are the universal jokes too. So,
you know, what's interesting, you said earlier, you mentioned Saturday Night Live, and I was thinking how Saturday Night Live right now has such an amazing cast of women.
Yep.
Like, there's hilariously funny women on the show, and I feel like when there's great kind of golden age in terms of that. And I would love to see more women who write funny getting recognized in the same way. Like, because I think there are a lot of incredible women writing funny books right now. And so I feel like a lot of what I'm curious about is why the default is that women, you know, funny books written by women are cute or are, you know, for girls or whatever. I mean, we've certainly heard some of the things that Shannon Hale has been posting about getting kind of told that her books are just for the girls. Why, who's putting that limitation on and why? And at the same time, you're seeing funny books written by men getting a lot of attention and, if not awards, certainly getting a lot of kind of star status for, you know, for the work. When I think, you know, when I look at something, you know, when I look at like Amy Ignatow or someone like that, like she's a genius. And so I feel like there are a lot of women writing today that, you know, are getting some due, but should get more.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think it's the old problem of the default, right? Like, the white guy is writing the humor, like, that's the default, and then anything that's sort of, like, is different than that is different. And cute was such a good way of putting it.
Ugh.
Yeah. Cute is the worst. Or nice. Yeah. It's nice to see that you've got a sense of humor there. That's sweet. Yeah, it's... Oh. Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, I think a lot about how women comedian came to the forefront. Women like Jackie Moms Mabley, like Toadie Fields, who I loved.
Oh, Fanny
with her Minnie Pearl I had to visualize the price tag, Minnie Pearl, and of course, our patron saint, Joan of Many Rivers. You know, I think about.
She's in the book too. Okay. Had to be in the book.
And of course, Phyllis Diller. You know.
Yes.
Phyllis Diller was so important because she came out there with you know, she came out there many times no makeup, and then she get really creative with the makeup. And she had the Phyllis Diller laugh. And she made, you know, she made those jokes about her husband, about being a housewife, and the whole shtick. Not only did men find her funny, but women found her empowering. And so, you know, so it first, women were very, you know, self-deprecating, you know, and all of the jokes were kind of turned at them, and then they started to turn it out. And that was when, like, a lot of that change happened, and so you couldn't go with those same models. And I have to believe that what we do in that large culture really free someone to really write those stories and those characters with who are funny in inappropriate ways or in surprising ways, and that, you know, that we have to go with it and say, yeah, we are so here, and that person is so me or my sister, you know, or but we have to get beyond either the cute or the you have to be in an unattractive person, or, you know, quote unquote unattractive person to tell a joke. You know, we, like women humor has to come in every form that a woman comes in, and that's why Toni Fields and Jackie Moms Mabley were so important to me.
Yes, very much so.
I like to like sort of build on that, but I harken back to something that Cece said a minute ago about how girls, like, they're kind of taught, oh, it's not okay for you to enjoy the potty humor or any of those kind of things. And that sort of goes into that whole enormous category of the way we talk to girls versus the way we talk to boys. And the, you know, kids, women apologize for things constantly. Oh, I'm sorry, but I don't agree with you. Well, no, I just don't freaking agree with you because you're wrong. About Clara Oswald, and I said I wouldn't go there, but Doctor Who, whatever. But we kind of teach girls, you know, you need to be prim, proper, and all of those good things, and not buy into the, you know, whatever the joke is, or, and that spills into how people perceive women who write, I think.
Yes.
It's like, oh, because you do come off as, oh, well, that's surprisingly funny for someone who has that body structure. You know?
Well, it's
it
like,
nothing to do with it. I didn't use this bit. So.
It's like the Shannon Hale story. You know, the one where her male friend was like, "Oh, you wrote that?" And it was Shannon and her husband doing something together. And correct me if I get any of this wrong, but this guy who had known them both for years was like, "Oh, I thought you just typed that. You actually wrote it?
Whoa.
I thought he wrote it."
He said that to Shannon? Have you met her?
He did, and then and the kicker was she had been in an improv troupe with him
yes.
for years, and it still did not occur to him that she had been the author of the funny thing. He just assumed she copied it down from her husband talking to her. Yeah.
Yes. After we kill him, we'll resume this panel.
Shannon probably already did. Don't worry about it.
So that's why she's not here. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is. I mean, what you're talking about is basically cultural censorship and self-censorship. And so it involves sort of checking yourself every day. And that's very hard because if you were brought up to apologize for everything, especially your sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I know one woman who, until recently, and I love this story because it was wonderful. She said, I thought that funny guys would want to be involved with funny women because they like to laugh. And she found out that they really just want an audience.
Yeah. Saying that you want a woman with a sense of humor means you find my jokes funny.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And they're so often not very funny. I mean, I speak as a tough room personally, but I feel that I mean, you're asking why aren't more of these books getting published? And it's tough because sometimes you can sneak it in inside a different kind. There are a lot of books that are not funny first. But books that are funny first, a lot of people don't really know what to do with them unless they're sort of, but they have to be kind of gender neutral. I would guess. And they shouldn't be. I mean, there should be a girl who's front and center doing stuff.
But this is sort of interesting because it's like, I mean, there are a lot of women in publishing. There are a lot of women who handle the purchasing of books. I mean, obviously everyone in the room is on the right side of this equation. But I feel like it's sort of a new, this is a little subversive. I'm sorry. But I feel like it's a new frontier in which to sort of question our assumptions.
Yes.
About, you know, when something comes across your plate as to, you know, is this something that I like? Is this something that kids would like? Is this something that I want to lift up? You know, questioning your kind of inherent sort of, it's sort of like, you know, it's another kind of bias that we grow up with because of, you know, the models that we have before us. And when you get to a certain point and you default to, well, I got two books to choose between, but this one the kids are going to love because it's a guy book and so the boys and the girls will read it, whereas this book, maybe the boys won't read it, and I want to get my boys to read. And so questioning that assumption, I think, is a huge part of...
It's not just the editor questioning the assumption. You have to convince a marketing department, which is mostly ladies, sales department. I mean, you've got a lot of biases to challenge.
Well, and even me. I very recently had to challenge my own bias. Shannon Hale had a story in here about her twin daughters. Yeah. She expanded on that. She said, hey, I've got a manuscript for you. Would you like to read it? It's like an early chapter book about these same twin daughters. And I read it, and I have never read anything for women that was that starring by a woman that was as scatological as that book.
Cece, pay attention.
Amazing. It was amazing. And I had this moment of like, oh, she's going to have to tone that down to get that published. And I had to be like, oh, no, she does not. No, she does not. And it's not even like Captain Underpants level. It's just, if you have twin daughters, this is your life, where they're just sitting there and then one of them moves the hand just close enough to the other one so that it hits her that she can hit back. It was amazing that the amount of head injuries these children must have gotten in their lives. And I'd never read anything like that. But even I, like, reading this thing, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's going to fly. We better, you know, take that down a little. I'm like, no.
I think a lot of it's like you said, having gatekeepers challenge the assumption. And a lot of that is parents, because in a bookstore, the parents will go, okay, no, honey, that one's not for you. And that, you know, and that may be true certainly with picture books. They won't like, oh, no, honey, you're over six. You don't get picture books anymore. But it is also true, I think, with the humor. Oh, no, don't go for that one, because that's like on underpants and, you know, we don't do that. So I don't know how we tackle that with those particular gatekeepers, but I think that's kind of key. That's where you guys come in. Yeah.
Well, so I had a request to submit a short story for an anthology for girls, and these are supposed to be positive stories for girls, and I had a positive story. I wanted to write about this girl who was a boxer, and she had to make weight. Now, so she did everything she could do to make weight. And so the upside of it is that she's just going to stuff herself ridiculously and try to hold everything in, whereas everything is screaming to come out. All she needs is 3 pounds, and she can fight this girl. So she makes weight, and then all of a sudden, her ears turn red. Something is about to happen. So I thought, yeah, okay, I'll just let the person who's requesting, I'll just let them know, you know, the synopsis of the story, you know, so I can just merrily go along. Well, we're back to the gatekeepers. We want to present positive body images and to not have those kinds of issues of, you know, of women and their physicality and that kind of thing. So on one hand, yes, I mean, I understand what you are saying, but on the other hand, funny story. and so I just had to say, you know what, I don't have time for all this, and I had to like just let it go. But we want to do so much for our kids, and sometimes we have to kind of let them be in the world and experience the breadth of the experiences so they can ask the questions or have the discussions or, damn it, laugh.
In that situation, though, wouldn't that have been showing a different model for girls? Like one who's not going to be like, oh, no, now I'm not going to be like a little skinny thing. I'm going to go beat that girl. I'm going to change my body image. Yeah. I would have thought that had been very empowering.
I don't see how that's not a positive thing. Was it?
Now we're mad.
Good work. We have about 20 minutes here. And what I think we need to do before we do the last bit, there are a few things. I have many questions, and I will cut it down quick. Let's talk about boosting signal for female creators. I think that's hugely important. Please invite female writers to your library. Please invite female writers into the classroom. You know, if you want somebody funny, there are loads of women out there who are. That book will tell you some. But why don't we each recommend maybe one person, maybe one woman you think is funny? Kat, because there are a few more questions. Do you want to recommend a couple each? Go ahead.
I mean, there were so many people that I wanted for the book that were so busy, and so it's hard to choose. The one that I really, 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 really wanted, and she's making picture books now, so it wasn't entirely ridiculous. But I don't know if any of you know Kate Beaton and her Hark a Vagrant comics, but Hark a Vagrant is, to my mind, the funniest comics of all, and they were collected in two collections. One is Hark a Vagrant. And the other one is Step Aside, Pops. Yeah, exactly. Oh, Step Aside, Pops is
good. And there's the Farting Pony book.
Yes, and she did that Fat Pony book, and she did the King Baby, and those are good. But Hark a Vagrant is brilliant. If you want to see somebody take Nancy Drew covers and then turn them into comic strips that show just how weird those Nancy Drew, original Nancy Drew, yellow Nancy Drew covers are, they are weird covers. And I love her so much. Okay.
I'm for picture books, and that's a different topic altogether. But I'm gonna say Kelly DiPuccio, who cracks me up one side and down the other. Donna Gephardt, who is funny. I know, but that's why I'm glad we started at this end, because I knew you were going there. I think she's hilarious, but her books are so full of heart and important topics. So that's who I'm going to go with.
Andrew took some of mine. Uh-huh. I love Kelly DiPuccio. I love her picture books. I have a lot of, her
books. Yeah, I wish she would do novels.
Yeah, I think she's working on something. I think that would be very cool. Donna Gephardt, I also love. I already mentioned Amy Ignatow, who I think is incredible in terms of her illustration, her graphic noveling, and her brain. She's just hilariously. Amy Ignatow. Also follow her on social media. She's just very funny there too. She really is. Yeah, that's a good connection. Yeah, she's Linda Barry-esque in her stuff. Great middle grade, really just terrific stuff. The Popularity Papers is her series that's, I think, most well-known, but she's done lots of other cool stuff. The Mighty Odds, I think, is the most recent one.
Okay. Which is great.
Libba Bray just slays me. She's just out there. So definitely Libba. But also consider Uma Krishnaswamy. The grand plan to cure everything, change everything, fix everything. Anyway,
fix.
Okay. So one thing I had to share with Uma was that a librarian had handed this book to a Southeast Asian girl, and she almost didn't want it because the little girl thought, oh, here's yet another story about suffering in India. And then when she read it, she just could not stop laughing. So, you know, I mean, Uma. Uma and Uma, Libby, Libba, 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 Uma.
Uma and Libba.
Here.
Okay. I guess I'm going to go back in time with mine. Beverly Cleary.
Yes. Thank you.
Oh,
thank
my
you.
God. The woman, those stories are just so funny, and she probably tops for me, and the stories are so real, and yet the stuff that Ramona does, and the stuff that Beezus, I was Beezus, I wasn't Ramona, and Beezus really resonated with me, because she could be funny, and that, and then I have this secret mission that she doesn't know about, but I want Amy Sedaris to write children's books just for me, because
she'd do it for you.
Has some funny stuff going on, so those would be mine. Yeah.
I'm going to mention the people who you mentioned in your blog post, or at least some of them. Paula Danziger. Mm-hmm. Just because something's in the backlist does not mean it's not relevant, despite what the bookstores might want to tell you. I recommend Diana Wynne Jones for funny fantasy. Also, Jessica Day George. Her stuff is Patricia Reedy. I mean, there are so many funny female writers who you wouldn't think of as the funny writers, but they are. But Diana, I was, you recommended Barbara Park, as I recall. Betsy's done a bit of blogging about this, so I guess you could check it. But there are a lot of funny female writers in the backlist, and that's another project to work on. I'm
dead
going.
Funny
what?
Dead funny women.
Yes, dead funny women. This was what I wanted in the book, a bunch of dead funny women, which is funny in and of itself. Let's see. Yes. Basically, the important thing is to also, I would recommend magazines like Kazoo. Kazoo is a wonderful magazine, very funny, really, for girls specifically. They just got a 2-book deal with Knopf, with mazes and all sorts of cool stuff. And they are lighthearted and often very funny. I'm trying to think if there was anything else I wanted to talk about boosting signal for female creators. It would be interesting if you guys just went into your brains and figured out what you might think was interesting and maybe hashtag it. What should we hashtag it? Funny girls, women write funny. What was that hashtag that we had?
Funny girls.
Yeah, we could just do funny girls. And if you have your suggestions, I would hashtag it like ALA17 with the ALA17 hashtag and then funny girls. And I will be talking about it, I think. The more we can boost signal on the people who you think are your secrets, but you know that kids would love, of both sexes, is hugely important. I mean, the more girls see the humor in the books, the more they feel able to express the humor in the world.
Can I also ask you all to think about hosting some open mics?
Brilliant.
Stand up, daughter. Because when Michelle was 3 years old, she had her own talk show. It was called Shelley's World.
Yes, you can sit down.
You can sit. But let me continue doing my job as embarrassing you.
Form of women's humor.
And her Ed McMahon was her little sister. She taught her sister comedic timing. She'd do a monologue before she went to bed. You know, can we encourage our daughters to just yuck it up and laugh even when it's laying an egg?
That's a brilliant idea. Also, you know, the class can do a humor magazine. That can be a library program to do a little humor magazine.
Yeah, one thing I always do when I go to a school visit, and I do this for all grades, even though it comes from a picture book of mine, is I show them the little notebook page that when I first wrote down, you know what, chicken butt, and drew a little chicken's butt to go with it in my notebook. But I show it to them just to tell them that, like, any stupid idea that you think is like a throwaway nothing joke that you heard, if you put it on paper, it can someday be something. You know, you don't know, and if you censor yourself and you tell yourself, oh, that's not funny, or that's not important, and this is something that all kids obviously do, but I think girls in particular have that kind of self-censor really turned up to high volume, you know, to kind of say, like, oh, yeah, that's funny, but I'm not going to bother, I'm not going to, you know, go there, I'm not, what could I possibly, but if you write it down, then later on you can go back in and you can play around with it and you can edit it and you can take the little idea and stretch it and make it bigger and do all the things that happen that take idea to finished book or whatever you want to make of it. And it's a really good message to say to, you know, I mean, it's good for all kids to hear that your ideas matter, but it's particularly good for girls to hear that your stupid ideas matter and your ideas that you're going to tell the world aren't important are important, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, especially when they hit about 11, 9 to 11, 12, when you begin to tamp yourself down and somebody who is extremely funny in elementary school suddenly gets pretty quiet or gets ostracized. And I think, you know, if you are a parent, a mom who is funny or an aunt who is funny, or you just have your friends' kids around and they're funny, be funny with the kids. Be funny with the girls. Model. You know, I mean, this is not a prescriptive, I'm not like, but, you know, it's important to think about how to boost that signal in your own life. We're not at questions yet.
We're going to run out of time.
We're going to each tell one quick joke.
Oh, we're going to run out of time, though.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care.
There's no time for that.
Okay. What were you saying, Ask Liaison?
Lock the doors.
There better not be anybody out there. I'll punch them in the face. Sorry.
Sharon, can I tell my joke, Sharon?
We're going to start this regardless.
Sharon?
I asked everybody to come up with their funniest jokes, their favorite joke. And Betsy will begin.
Okay. It's a knock-knock joke. And I know they're not ever funny, but I heard this one recently, and I'd never heard it before. And I've got a six-year-old, okay? So I had never heard this before. You going to do it with me?
Yeah.
All right. Some of you may know it, but I just heard it, so I have the thrill of just, this is a visual, by the way, so okay. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting starfish.
Interrupting starfish. Ah!
That's good.
I love that.
I like that. Oh. Okay.
Shall we run to 4:30? Well, we'll run to 4:15.
All right.
Okay.
So here is my joke. Do you know how to tell a good joke from a bad joke timing?
Thank you very much. Wow, I have to follow these guys? That is not fair. All right, my joke's slightly longer, but I'm going to try and tell it quick. All right, there's a guy, he's driving down the road, and at the side of the road, there is a pig sitting at the side of the road. And so he pulls his truck over, and he's like scratching his head, trying to figure out why there's a pig at the side of the road. Next thing he knows, a police officer pulls up behind him, and is like, yo, buddy, move your pig off the road. And he's like, no, officer, that's not my pig. I just pulled over to take a look and see what was going on. So the officer's like, huh. Well, listen, if that's the case, can you help me out here? I can't put livestock in my squad car, but you got a truck. Can we just like maybe get the pig in the back of the truck? And next exit down the road is a zoo. Why don't you just go take the pig to the zoo? They'll know what to do. So the guy's like, yeah, I guess I can. So the two of them like get the pig into the back of the truck, and they put it in there, and they close up the truck, and the guy goes on his way, and the officer goes off. And the next day, the officer is driving down the same road, and all of a sudden, he notices a truck. And it's the same guy driving a truck, and in the back of the truck is the pig. And so the officer's like, okay. And so he turns on his siren, and he pulls the guy over, and he goes up to the side of the car, and he says, hey, buddy, I saw you yesterday, didn't I? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I guess you did. Yeah, that was me. And he says, I saw that pig in the back of your truck. That was yesterday, right? The guy's like, yep. And he says, well, didn't I tell you to go take that pig to the zoo? And the guy goes, oh, yeah, we did. And he had such a good time. Today we're going to the circus.
Okay. All right. Okay, I'll try to be quick about this. I borrowed a joke. Okay, so this librarian was in this predicament where she had these two hulking teenage boys. I'll make them hulking teenage girls with boxing gloves, and they were going to fight. You know, they were like gearing up to fight in the stacks, and so she jumped in between them and she said, "You can't do that." And they said, "Yes, we can." She said, "No, you can't do that. Not in here." "Yes, we can." And she said, "Who's going to clean up all that blood?"
I tried.
mine is short. It's what did the Zen master say to the hot dog vendor? Make me one with everything.
My favorite joke, Betsy knows my favorite joke. You actually know my favorite joke. I have a few. But what's the one I want to tell? What do you call someone else's cheese? Nacho cheese. I'm seven. Does anybody, since we have a little more time, we're allowed to go, we have about 20 more minutes, says our ASK liaison, so we can have questions. The poor person who raised her hand that I shot down.
What?
What's your question?
Oh, I was just going to say that Volumes is a new indie bookstore in Chicago, and they have been doing since forever now, since they opened an open mic night specifically for women.
Really?
So if you're ever in Chicago, check it out, because it's a great maybe format for how you could do it with girls as well. So sorry to interrupt.
No, thank you so much. I'm glad I caught you.
Great job.
Okay, other questions, thoughts, comments, or jokes?
Yes.
Okay.
I pointed her. I mean,
oh, Abby Hanlon is wonderful.
She was too intimidated by the lineup and wouldn't do it.
Oh, no.
I know.
Will you say the author again?
Abby Hanlon, who writes the Dory Phantasmagory books for Dial.
So good.
And they are wonderful. Other thoughts? Other hands? I see that hand, pink lady. Interesting family. Other jokes? Yes. Ask liaison. What is your joke? I don't know. Yes.
I got an elephant one. Go ahead. Go.
Your mom told that to you?
Busting stereotypes. Go, mom.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Did you hear the joke about the two feminists? That's not funny.
Another joke. Yes, hand in the back. You. How?
Pokemon.
Okay.
Did you hear about the cheese factory? The explosion of the cheese factory?
Yeah.
All that's left is debris.
These are fantastic.
Women are fun.
Yes.
What did Lana Ocean say to the editor?
I give up.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's actually a Passover joke.
All right.
Passover joke. So a man is, it's a beautiful day at Passover, man works in an office, he decides to have lunch in the park. So he's sitting on a bench in the park and he's eating his Passover lunch. And then as he's sitting there, another man who's very poor and raggedy looking with a white cane is walking down the park. The man with the white cane sits on the same bench as the man who's eating his lunch. And he clearly looks like he could use a good meal. And the man feels awful, but all he has left from his lunch is one piece of matzah. You may have heard this.
No.
So without saying a word, he hands over the matzah to the guy. And the guy picks it up, and he sort of runs his hands over the top, and he turns to his benefactor, and he says, "Who wrote this crap?"
My dad told me that joke. I love that joke. Anybody else? Yes. Green lady.
What's Mario's favorite type of pants?
What?
Denim.
Ba-na-na-na. Yes. Okay, I have my father was like old Jews telling jokes, but a man. And he told me this joke, and it was the only funny joke he ever told me. Some of you have heard this before. A woman comes home and says to her husband, if I won the lottery, what would you do? And he says, I would take half the money and leave you. And she says, well, I get a scratch off. I won $6. Here's $3. Get the hell out. To your point, that's a fantastic joke. Anybody else? Back in the back.
What do you call a fish with no eye?
Yeah.
My answer to the joke is an author recommendation. Of course, she's only written one book, but Kimberly Baker, the author of Pickle.
Oh, yeah.
Love that book.
I love yeah. Kids,
yes. So. Yes. Pickle. Excellent book. Very funny.
Yeah. I hope she writes
more. Me too. Where is she? She should be here. Yes.
Other jokes, author recommendations, thoughts, comments? Yes. I know this one, but I'll tell
you.
What's brown and sticky?
A stick.
Exactly. That's a child's favorite joke. Yes. Where does what?
Oh, that's
bad. Oh, these are good.
All right, I have a Chicago one because I know people are out of town. So one day, Mayor Rahm Emanuel and President Trump and the Pope go out in an airplane, fly around over the city, and they're out, and they're flying around, they're going over Lake Michigan, seeing the sights, and suddenly the pilot says, "Oh, I've got some bad news. We're going to crash, and we don't have enough parachutes, and I'm taking one." And so he goes and he jumps out the window, and so then. The Pope is like, "Oh no, that's a bad." So that is my horrible Pope impersonation, and it's not even like appropriate for his nationality. That's so bad and offensive to everyone, but it's okay. So he's like, "But as leader of the Catholics of the world, and that is millions of people, I think I should have it. Goodbye." And he jumps out with the parachute. So now there's Rahm Emanuel and President Trump, and they're on this plane, and it's circling. It's going to go down any moment, one parachute. And Rahm Emanuel says, "You know, as far as I can tell, this is still a democracy, and I think we should vote." And he won 5-2. Because it's Chicago, folks, and that's how we do it here.
Okay, anybody else? Okay.
That's a goodie.
There's a very funny story by a spec fic writer named Leslie Watt. Her last W-H-A-T, and it's called 230, and it's about this guy who goes to the dentist because he has a toothache and discovers that he has this whole society living in his tooth. It's for adults. It's hysterical. Starts giving him love advice. It's, you know, there are so many funny writers that people don't, you know. I do want to mention Susan Juby, because she's YA, but she is very funny, but Canadian funny, which is different than American funny. It's true. Anybody else? Yes.
When mine is a visual effect, so you'll have to bear with me. A guy goes into a bar, across a factory, and a beer. And the factory, you know, the bar owner says, hey, I got to slip for 15 minutes. Don't worry, the factory's letting out. He said, but they're deaf kids. It's super easy. He said, they'll either want a shot or a drag. So if they go like this, they want a shot. If they go like this, they want a drag.
Do we want to end with one more? Nobody has a joke. Surely one. Okay, you can be the one. Sure. Thank you. Thank you, guys. You've been a terrific audience. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Thank you, guys.